I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tampa Bay Rays beat the Yankees 7-5 in Game 2 of their American League Divisional Series. They are now tied that one 1-1. Yankees trailed 5-1 before a couple Giancarlo Stanton home runs, including a grand slam. Tyler Glasnow with a good performance. It'll be Charlie Morton that'll go for the Rays tonight in Game 3. And can the Tampa Bay Lightning keep their core of players together and make a run for another Stanley Cup? We've got all that and more to talk about with Tom Jones, my former radio partner and longtime columnist of the Tampa Bay Times, now with the Poynter Institute, on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Tommy, we have all just been witness to the Tampa Bay Rays beating the Giancarlo Stantons 7-4.
That ball's still going, by the way, that home run.
Oh,
holy
my God.
Mackerel. I wet myself at home. Seriously, I was watching a game. He hit it. I wet myself. That's how much I was scared of that home run. Holy
wow. Didn't need to hear that. All I could think of was Kevin Costner in Bull Durham, where he walks out and he says, man, anything goes that high and that fast, I ought to have a blankety-blank stewardess on it, don't you think?
You know what? Remember there was a dude from Sarasota High School. His name was Greg Blosser. This was years ago. I think he actually had a cup of coffee in the majors. And he pitched, and I was covering a state playoff game, and he was facing Sterling Hitchcock, who played at Armwood High School,
yeah.
I believe. And I'm pretty sure I have this right. And it was during one of these like district games or regional games or whatever. And Greg Blosser hit the longest home run I've ever seen off of Sterling Hitchcock. And after the game, really? I'm like, and Sterling Hitchcock was a senior in high school, and he's just a kid, you know. And I'm like, oh man, he's going to be just devastated by this. And they lost and everything. And I went up to him, and I was kind of sheepish about it. And I was like, yeah, the home run. And he turned to me and goes, have you ever seen a ball hit that far? I was like, no. He goes, that's the furthest ball I've ever seen hit. How far do you think that ball went? And I just thought, from then on, I'm like, Sterling Hitchcock is the coolest kid I've ever met in my
player.
Life. That he was just like, he was in awe. And I wonder if, like, even if Tyler Glasnow, but I wonder, like after the game, if he looks back, he's like, holy mackerel, was that ball lit up.
I'll say this. I don't know that I've seen a guy, if that ball had a string on it, he would have been pulling it back, because I don't know. You know, you see the pitcher's release. You see the pitcher's reaction when they know they've made a mistake. I'm telling you, this ball wasn't out of his hand. He was already, like, going into the fetal position. Like, why did I throw it there?
Oh,
I mean,
no.
It was so quick, you know?
Yeah. It was unbelievable.
Boom, break. You know, like. I mean, it was he was so crestfallen that he threw, and a fastball at that. Like, what are you doing? And then, you know, after that, it was just all sliders in the dirt that they were swinging at.
Well, I'm telling you, Stanton would not see another strike. Although they struck him out later in the game,
never.
Three
sliders.
Yeah, he's not seeing any more fastballs from me. I'm not sure he's seen any more strikes from me the rest of this series. He's not going to beat me.
Good point.
Yeah.
No, good point. I mean, why would you throw anything close to the plate, especially 2-0? I mean, that's the thing. Like, Snell did that too, where, you know, this is not the lineup you want to go. Ball one, ball two. You know, 3-1.
Right. Right.
You just don't want to do that to these guys. I mean, they're just maulers. And I mean, they're up 5-1, and all of a sudden it's a dogfight. Boom, it's 5-4. By the way, did you hear your boy John Sterling's call?
No, on which one? On Stanton?
On Stanton? Yeah.
No,
it was on the Grand Slam.
Oh.
So he has this thing. You know,
yeah, yeah.
For those of you who don't know John Sterling. You must not be a Yankee fan or haven't listened to radio on the Yankees in about, 80 years. I think he called Ruth and Gehrig. I'm not sure. But he's been a while, and of course, we tried to have him on a radio show. That didn't go too well.
You got to tell that story, man.
Well, we're going to. We're absolutely going to. So the Yankees were in town, And you know, as was many often the case when the Yankees or some other club was coming to to St. Petersburg, we would get like an opponent's kind of scouting report, and very often it came, our producer would arrange for it to come from, you know, the visiting broadcaster, you know, which, I mean, let's face it, we're a morning show. Nobody likes to get up, especially when you're calling night baseball, right, or flying in from someplace, you know, wants to get up before 9 o'clock and do our show. But nonetheless, most of them did, and they were always very good and very nice. In fact, we had Susan Waldman. She was excellent.
Oh, right? Susan Waldman was the best. She was great. I love Susan Waldman. And I don't even know why. After you tell this story, you'll know why we only asked for Susan Waldman from then on. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, you don't want to do the Susan Waldman now? Because I said, I teed you up. I
mean, no.
Okay.
No.
You want to wait?
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay. Because I love what she used to say. She was in love with Joe Madden. Let me just put that out there.
She was in love with Joe Madden. Yeah, and she had the greatest moment. If you ever go on the internet, I think it was Opie and Anthony was that talking about, oh, and Roger Clemens is in George's box. When Roger Clemens came back, it's exactly. Very R-rated. It's very R-rated if you ever look it up. It's,
yeah,
it's
we're not
very
gonna do
funny
that
at the same time. But anyway, go ahead.
It's hysterical.
But John Sterling, go ahead.
So John Sterling is ass. And of course, you know, he's the guy that, if you listen to him, he's always the nit is high, nit is far, nit is. He has all the nicknames, you know, and it's an A-bum from A-Rod, you know, and all that stuff. And really, he stole the whole gimmick from Snagglepuss. I don't know if you remember the cartoon character, Snagglepuss, where he was like, heavens to Murgatroyd, exit, stage right. That's exactly who John Sterling is, right? He's just,
I never
he's
made
just
that Snagglepuss connection. You're absolutely right, yeah.
Yeah, he is. He's that guy. Heavens, hitters high, heavens to Murgatroyd, exit, stage right. It is gone. So, anyway, we're trying somehow. Our producer that asked?
Yeah, John Mamola, who was, you know, back.
John Mamola, our producer that's still at the DAE, he asked if Sterling was interested in coming on. And only in the John Sterling voice, Tommy, what did he say?
He said, why would I get up that early to talk to you? And John, I guess Mamola was like, I guess you wouldn't. Thanks. And then the next day he's like looking for number for Susan Waldman. Yeah.
Which she was like, oh, it's great to be with you. I just love Joe Madden.
Well, and it's funny, too. And just as a real quick aside, so our buddy Ira Kaufman, you know, worked for the Tampa Tribune for years. He grew up in New York. And I guess years ago, John Sterling used to have a talk show in New York. And Ira called in, like, it was
God,
like Christmas.
Can you imagine that?
He called in on Christmas Eve. It was like a Christmas Eve show. And he calls in to complain. Ira calls in to complain about, like, the Nets or something. And John Sterling says, let me ask you something, Ira. And he said, you know what? You have a shrill voice, an annoying voice, and I don't want to hear from you. And hung up on him. And Ira's like, it's one of his favorite moments of Ira's life. Because I got hung up on by John Sterling. Anyway, so John Sterling's
did
not
Ira
happy.
Call in and did Ira call in and go, John, Johnny, Johnny, JS?
I mean, you know, Mets, struggling various, a little bit. Anyway,
Nets. So the Grand Slam.
Yeah,
I happen to be hearing a replay of it on the radio because I went out for a burger, So I have not heard what he says about Giancarlo because I try to imagine, right? Like, what would you say about Giancarlo, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure what
like his call it's is. It's a Farlo from Giancarlo. Like, what would you say? What would you say? And so it's like, you know, there's a drive. Nin is high. Nin is far. Nin is gone. A grand slam. A Stantonian home run.
Stantonian home run.
I don't even know what that means. Do you know what that means?
No. Stanton. What's slam? Stantonian? I don't. Yeah.
A Stantonian. Stantonian home run. Why would I
get up that early up to you. Talk to you? I guess you won't.
Heavens to Murgatroyd. Exit baseball. Stage left. Anyway, we digress. Okay, so this game is just the way you would script it. The Rays out-homering the Yankees. What the hell? They get up 5-1, and, you know, pretty soon you start asking, is there any guy on that staff that can hold, like, I don't know, a 3-run lead, a 2-run lead, a 1-run lead? But Tyler Glasnow turned out to anchor it just enough. Let me just say this. Tom, I don't know how long you've been watching this guy, because I think he's been up for about 3 weeks, and he's hit 20 home runs. This Randy Arozarena?
Yeah.
This guy's like Roberto Clemente.
He's been unbelievable.
What can't he do?
No,
I mean, the guy can run. He's got a tremendous arm, and the home runs now. I mean, you can't get him out, number one.
He's been tremendous, and it's really important, too, because, I mean, Brandon Lau's off to a rough start in this series.
Mm-hmm.
And until Meadows hit that home run, you know, you didn't know what you're really going to get from him. So there were key parts of this lineup. But this guy's come through in a big-time way and really has been the MVP through these first two games. I'll tell you what, though, Rick, this, you know, I mean, there was a dicey ninth inning in game two with Fairbanks really struggling before he found his groove. And then, of course, the night before with Curtis in game one. You know what the problem is, Rick? And we can sit there and we can talk about Cash and his use of the bullpen, and we can talk about how the back end of the bullpen is struggling a little bit, their A bullpen and their B bullpen. But the problem is, Rick, they needed three outs on game one just to give themselves a chance. They needed three outs to make things a little bit easier in game two. And the problem wasn't the three outs in the ninth. It was the three outs in the sixth, Rick. These starting pitchers have to go deeper. They need six innings out of Glasnow. They need six innings out of Blake Snell. And if you look back at that game, especially game one, if Blake Snell can get you six, that backs everybody up an inning. They can't consider, mm-hmm. Look, they're not going to win this thing if they're only getting five innings out of their aces. And I understand that their pitch counts. I'm not saying you throw them back out there no matter what. And maybe Glasnow was done at that point. I'm not blaming Cash for pulling these guys. But, Rick, if you're going to be a big-time ace, you're going to be studs in the playoffs, you got to go more than five innings.
Yeah, you know, early on in the year, it was obvious, you know, these guys weren't built up, so they were obviously, you know, on the pitch counts and things like that. But, I mean, first of all, do you trust Blake Snell to ever get the five? I mean, it seems like he's got 60 pitches after two.
I know.
I mean, he's done this all year long where he nibbles and, you know, he's a strikeout guy. He's not a pitch-to-contact guy. So, you know, every batter's going to go full count, and he just burns himself out. And then you're right. That does not help. That's not what an ace does, right? That's not – you know, when you hand the ball, you know, to Justin Verlander, you hope to get five. I mean, like, that's sort of not, you go out there, you attack hitters and you get in the dugout. I mean, that's what you want. And to some degree, Glasnow has been that. Although Glasnow, I mean, you gotta say this, look, they're 10-0 in his last 10 starts. I mean, he's done everything he can do to help them win.
They both went five innings, Snell and Glasnow.
Yeah.
They both gave up four runs in those five innings. And yet it felt like Glasnow pitched a thousand times better than Blake Snell did. And really, when you look back,
because he made one bad pitch.
Boy, it was one bad pitch. Yeah, it was the groove shot, the moon ball.
I mean, woo. Yeah.
Giancarlo Stanton hit. But other than that, he struck out 10. He went after him. He attacked him. And I hate to beat up Blake Snell because he's been real. And I was encouraged after the game against Toronto, the playoff game, that
Snell
pitched
amazing
the way he did. Yeah. And I'm like, all right. If he can get it going now, but just moving forward, let's say they survive this series against, and there's a long way to go before they do that against the Yankees. They're gonna, if they get into the ALCS, they're gonna need a game where Blake Snell gives you like six, seven innings one of these times. Like, it's almost like Gerrit Cole the other night in game one. I don't even think Gerrit Cole had his A stuff. He was okay,
right.
But he still gave him six, and he was strong at the end. Like, that sixth and the big shutdown innings, those were big. Now, I will say this with Glasnow. Yeah, he gave up the home run to Stanton, but they tacked on a couple more runs, and then he went back out there and gave him a real big shutdown inning and was able to get
he
him,
did.
You know.
He was until the fifth, in his last inning.
But the guy
that we're not talking about, I mean, that actually won the game for them is Nick Anderson.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, Nick Anderson gives them two innings. And you know, Joe Mai used to do this too, and Kevin Cash does as well. Sometimes your high leverage innings is not there. It's not the ninth.
That's right.
It's not the three outs in the ninth. It's when you're clinging to a lead a little bit, and and you got the heart of the order, and you know, you've seen Giancarlo go deep and all that, and you need to, you know, you need to get, you need a shutdown inning, and he went out there and was fantastic.
Oh, and he got, I mean, he got the big guys too. I mean, he got Judge, he got Stanton, he got Voit. Yeah. I mean, those were the guys that you need to get. And really, when Fairbanks came in the game in the ninth inning, it's 7-4 and you're looking to close it out. But that, you were hitting, such as it is, the weaker part of the Yankee lineup, although it seems like everybody in that Yankee lineup can go yard on you. But at least it, you know, you're right. Like, I thought it was a really good move by Cash to put Anderson out there when he did, because the save situation was the seventh inning was the inning you had to get through. Two guys on, nobody out.
That's right.
And he ended up going two innings, which is what you needed. Like we were saying with Glass, you're gonna have to piece together three more outs somewhere, because Glass now didn't give you six, so you had to find three more outs. Well, he gave you the three more outs. Six batters, six outs, four strikeouts, I believe it was. He was really the key to that game. But look, this is gonna be a fun series. I think we saw in game two, Rick, the difference between, over. I think over the long haul, if the Rays are going to win this series, I think they're going to have to win it in four, but I think they can win it in four. You don't want to get Cole again, if you can avoid that, although Cole would be going on 3 days rest, assuming he pitches game five. But the Rays pitching, if you remove Cole, let's even say, I'll give you the, we'll scratch him out. You take away Snell from the Rays, take away Cole from the Yankees. From then on, I think the Rays have the better pitching. Now, their Yankees bullpen's really good. Their A bullpen, particularly when you get into like Britton and Chapman.
Chapman.
Which that was the other thing that hurt too, that game one, Rick, was Chapman not pitching. And now he hasn't pitched in two games. But it's a best out of three now, and you would assume that he could be available for at least two of those games. So but I like the Rays pitching from here on out. Starting pitching particularly. The next two games.
I do too. It's fine if Chapman doesn't pitch because they're behind and they don't need a save. Right. You know, the best way to keep him down there is to have a lead in the ninth inning, and you won't see him unless it's just a, you know, close. But yeah, and by the way, who is Peter Fairbanks? Wasn't there a great? I can't find him. Wasn't there a great actor named Peter Fairbanks? Am I missing something here?
There's a Douglas Fairbanks.
Seems like he should have been on the FBI or something. I can't.
Or on Hollywood.
There was Douglas Fairbanks. Is that what I'm thinking of?
Yeah, maybe so. It sounds like an actor's name, right?
It does, right? And starring Peter Fairbanks.
Rita Hayworth and Peter Fairbanks in. Yeah, some guy from the 40s. Some guy's like, rah, rah.
Yeah.
Talks like this. Yeah.
Hey. Yeah.
But once he dialed it in. I mean, you can tell these guys are ramped up. I mean, Tyler Glasnow throwing 100.
Oh, my God. He was throwing 100, man.
101. And then Fairbanks was hitting 100, which is more than he normally, although he's a hard, he's probably the hardest guy in that bullpen. But he, you know, he was up over 100. But, you know, it was funny because at one point, speaking of Bull, every pod we do comes back to Bull Durham, obviously. But
that's fine. I'm good with that.
But there was at one point, you know, where the announcer in the race, I'm not even sure who the announcer was on TBS, but he was like, Anderson, you know, he's thrown 18 pitches, 16 of them strikes. It sounded like the line in Bull Durham. And I felt like, all right, you got to hit the bull. You got to hit the bull just to throw him off. Like, it's like, I don't know where it's going. Seriously, I wouldn't step in there for you. I don't know where it's going. Well, Fairbanks was one of those guys. Like, man, this pitch could go anywhere those first few batters.
That's right. He swear finally, to God, I wouldn't dig in. I don't know where
he finally
going.
Dialed it in. Yeah. And look, the dude throws hard, man. But
oh, my God. He could throw it literally through the bull, through the wall. But he was sweating. He looked, I mean, I said before the podcast, he looked like Albert Brooks in Broadcast News. It was like, people are calling in saying, what's wrong with me? I have a heart attack. I was like, take a breath, bro. Just back up.
Yeah,
just take a breath
down.
Here.
Shouldn't have drank that five-hour energy right before you went out there. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It was, I'm telling you, Rick, I mean, over the course of these two games, I mean, you throw out the ninth inning of the top of the ninth in game one, and the Rays have really hung in there. The Yankees, this was a scary team coming into this series. They were really starting to look like the Yankees that everybody thought they would be, where everybody's healthy again, particularly Stanton.
Well, that lineup,
Judge.
I mean,
where's the weak part in that lineup? Yeah.
There's none. And there, you can't listen. And this is going to be the thing. And that's how the Rays got the, you know, 40 and 20. But I mean, you're not going to go up against many teams and say the Rays are better 1 through 9 or 1 through 8 or whatever the lineup is that night. That's just not going to happen. I mean, they are the sum of their parts guys, right? But 1 through 25, 1 through 40, they've got you, right? The depth and the injuries and the things, you know, 12 different guys with saves and, you know,
they just come at you. It's just such a weird team, Rick. Like, you know, you get somebody like Zanino comes up there and he looks helpless sometimes at the plate. And then all of a sudden he hits a jack. It's a big home run, too.
Yeah.
And then Kiermaier comes up. He's like 0 for 6 and no, and
leaves guys on.
And I was thinking, oh my gosh, that second he came up with guys on second and third and one out. And you're like, they need to, they need more runs. They need more runs. And I think at the time it was like 5-1. And this is before the Stanton home run. And you're, and because the next half inning is when Stanton hit the home run, but he ends up hitting like a feeble little pop up. You're like, anything else? Like, if you just could have pounded into the ground, you would have scored a run. And then you're thinking, like, oh, okay, he's not going to do anything tonight. Then he came up with a big hit later in the game. So these guys will go through stretches where they just look horrible. And then all of a sudden, they get a big hit and they win ball games because of it. So,
yeah, it was clutch. They, look, they had to tie it up. I mean, you know, you don't want to be in a situation where down 0-2, series is pretty much over, and you got Charlie Morton. And I don't know what, you know, Charlie Morton's pitching so many big games now. You know, towards the end of the year, it looked like he got his curveball back a little bit, but he hasn't exactly been that consistent, you know. It's just been an uneven year.
Same thing with Tanaka, too. I mean, Tanaka, he's going game three, right? So Tanaka's one of those guys where it's – I mean, I wouldn't be stunned if he came out and threw – 7 innings, 2 hit ball, 10 strikeouts, or that he didn't get through the second. You know, he's one of those, you could get anything out of him at this point. So I like Morton better, though, I think.
In a big game, I think, yeah, I kind of do. And I think, you know, the Rays are swinging the bats good, which going into it, I mean, if you're going to say, you know, the Rays are pitching in defense that they weren't going to hit, I mean, certainly they're not going to out-homer the Yankees very often. I mean, that's not the way you're going to necessarily win.
It's funny, though, all the postseason, baseball's changed so much, and there was a point in the game where they were talking about Glasnow had set a record for most strikeouts by a Rays pitcher in a postseason game with 10, and it was also the most homers they'd ever hit in a postseason game with 4, whatever it was. And one of the, I don't know if it was Ron Darling or who the play-by-play guy was, it was basically, I guess, Brian Anderson, right? The other Brian Anderson. Right. They were saying, like, that's baseball today. Like, every record set, it's like a home run record or a strikeout record. And that's the way the game – and we haven't seen hardly in this series at all any team string, like, 4 – like, out of 6 batters, like, single, double, you know, sack fly, another single, double. Like, no one's stringing together these big, long innings with 6 – like, 5-6 hits in an inning. It's all just maybe draw a walk and then hit a home run. It's all 3-run homers. It's all 2, you know. It seems like every run scored right now is a home run. And a lot of these series are like
that. It's home run or strikeout, isn't it? Isn't that, that's what the game is now, home run or strikeout?
It feels like it. And it's, I was watching that. There was a game earlier this, Cincinnati and Atlanta early in the playoffs where it went like 14 innings. And every guy came up just trying to win it by himself, just swinging out of their shoes. And everybody ended up striking out. And that's why you end up going 15 innings with nobody scoring a run. So it's just a weird, it's just weird how the game's being played. But I'll tell you what, the Rays. I mean, it's funny. They don't have a Judge or Stanton necessarily, but they have a lot of guys that can hit home runs too. You know, Choice hit in this series, and Zanino, and you never know. Like Meadows hits a home run, so they can mash.
Yeah, you still got Susugo on the bench you know, I mean,
you hope Brandon Lau gets hot again at some point.
Brandon Lau. Yeah. He led them in home runs. So, yeah, I mean, they're a confident ball club. Look, you don't win 40 out of 60 and not think you can beat anybody. And they certainly beat the Yankees during the regular season. I know Judge and Stanton and some of those guys were out, but they're not afraid of them. And it's not Yankee Stadium, right, where I think they exercise some of those demons, although there weren't fans there. That's the other thing. Like, does that help? How much does that help the Rays, right? How much does it help them to just be playing in a, you know, hermetically sealed ballpark in San Diego?
I think it probably helps. Now, you went to a playoff game last year, right?
The atmosphere was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. I went to game 4. Yeah,
but Yankee Stadium. I've been to playoff games at Yankee Stadium too, and they're I mean, it's a rowdy
it's a different
crowd.
Sound.
Yeah, and I yeah. mean, yeah. Maybe Fairbanks.
They're on you.
Doesn't get through. Now tonight's game would, or game two would have been at the Trop, but under normal
right.
circumstances.
But in that situation, with that yeah. crowd, what they can do to you, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes sure. it's better to be in a sort of quiet, sort of antiseptic stadium like
maybe
playing with
inside. I'll say this, and this isn't a slight to anybody, but I'm kind of digging the cutouts.
I don't mind.
I don't miss watching. When I watch games on TV, I got to be honest, I don't miss seeing people. I kind of like looking at the – I mean, I don't know why. I just kind of like looking at the cutouts, seeing who's out there. Does that sound odd?
No, kind it doesn't sound static, odd. Now, here, I have a question for you, and I'm unsure about this. I didn't know. So you've been to two road football games now with the Bucks, right? You've been
That's
to New
correct.
Orleans and you've been to Denver. Mm-hmm. So that crowd noise we're hearing, are you hearing it at the stadium or no? Is there crowd? Do they pump in crowd noise?
There's way more, from what I understand, in just watching the replay of the games, because I you know, get it on the interweb.
Yeah, yeah.
The TV noise is not what you hear in the stadium. In other words, it's much more on television. It's much more scientific.
Like they cheer at appropriate times and get more, quiet at appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah, more nuanced. Yeah, you know, boo on a penalty, yay yeah. on a play. They're team specific. Apparently, you're supposed to hear "Let's go Pack go," that sort of thing. You just sort of hear ambient noise a little bit in the stadium itself,
right?
And you know, now with some fans, I mean, it was absolutely like horrible in in the Superdome. Like that was the worst atmosphere, if you want to call it that. You might as well have been playing on the moon. You know what I mean? Like there
was
no
sound
at all.
No sound at all.
Yeah, there's no sound, and they did a horrible job because at that time I think they said they could go to 65 or 70 or 80 decibels, but I don't think the Saints got the memo or their building was too big because even when they would play the noise, you couldn't really hear it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And then they would shut it off completely like during the commercial breaks, which was not a good thing to do because then it was just like, you know, you went from to nothing to just, right. you know, just zero. And it didn't feel like football. Like, and I said that at that time, I go, oh, I don't think the NFL is going to stand for this for very long. Like they're going to have to let some people in. And what's amazing is that you do kind of like when you're watching the game, even from the stadium, it's sort of in your face. Like on TV, you don't get those angles and you don't really think, especially with the crowd noise they pipe in, that it sounds and looks kind of the same. But even at the stadium, like when we went to Denver and there were, I don't know, 6,000, 6,500 fans, that helped. I can't tell you that how much that helped because – you could see people. You could hear them.
What about
they
it?
They were fairly loud.
What about it, Ray J? For the
same. Yeah. I mean, not quite as loud as I thought maybe it could get, but just felt good having people in the building. It's so. Look, these guys are performers. You know what I mean? And they're competitors number one, so they're going to go out there and compete as hard as they can. But in football, in particular, you know, when you talk about sports, right? Like baseball. I mean, I played baseball, and you don't – not that I played in front of large crowds. I mean, but the largest crowd I probably played in front of was maybe 15,000 in Mississippi State or something. But you don't really listen – you don't really hear the crowd because it's pitcher against hitter. It's such a – it's a team game, but it's such an individual sport. It's like I have to beat the guy with the ball in his hand. And so you're locked in. You're not really hearing much. I can't speak to basketball because I never played anything at that level, just high school, so I don't know what those guys go through.
But you know what?
Football, you can try. Like you need to try harder. You know, like in football,
yeah.
effort matters, right? Like I can play harder. You can actually play harder in football, and it helps you. Maybe that's true in basketball too, as far as like defense or rebounding. And so that crowd sort of fuels you a little bit. You can feel them. You can feel the emotion. You can feel momentum from the crowd. You can get energy. Energy is the key word I was searching for. And you can really get it. You can't get it with just ambient noise from a speaker. You just can't. Right. You don't feel that. You hear it, but you don't feel it. And I think for football, I think early in the year, it's been a real shock to those players, right? Because if you think about it, the offense comes off the field, and then the defense goes and plays. Well, the offense doesn't stand there and clap for the defense. They go and sit down and look at charts and meanings, right. And they get water, and they talk to their position coaches, right? So who's cheering the guys on, right? And same thing is when the defense is on there and they make a big play. Those offensive guys are back there with their coaches, and they're not. So it's really different for football players than I think it has been for a lot of sports. Like now, hockey, you can speak to that. I didn't see the level of play drop one iota.
No, I thought the intensity was pretty strong. But I think in baseball, Rick, yeah. You hit on something with baseball is that, and I played high school baseball, and I've covered all of them at all levels. High school, college, sure. Pros. And I can tell you that I think probably baseball players are more used to playing in front of nobody than anybody else. Like you probably played right. In a bunch of American, like you played American Legion ball, you played high school ball,
yeah.
You know, at a good high school. And I'm sure you played Legion games where there was like 10 people watching you, you know. And sure. These guys play inter-squad games all the time in spring and all that they're playing or play right. Like
they're on a
fall leagues and stuff like that, where there's nobody there. Yeah. You know, it's like people are in lawn chairs.
Right.
And whereas in football, I mean, most of the guys playing in the NFL played at a decent college where they're playing in front of the 30, 40, 50, 80, 100,000 people.
Oh, 100,000 people. Yeah.
And I've covered high school basketball, Rick. You played high school basketball. You covered it. I covered it around here. It's loud. The gyms are loud, even if there's nobody
it's
there.
It's very loud, and you get a lot of people in there sometimes.
Right, right. And, I used to cover a bunch of games like Gibbs versus Lakewood. Those gyms were packed. Yeah, yeah, Clearwater and St. Pete High. And those gyms were packed. And so I do think that the baseball players probably – so to getting back to the Yankees-Rays series, certainly I'm sure they like it when the crowd is there. We've heard stories about how the old Rays players complained about nobody being at their trop. But I think in this situation, it's probably it probably feels somewhat familiar to them to play games even though there's nobody there, unlike other sports where it's unfamiliar.
I think it does.
It's strange.
I think it does now. Yeah, I think it does now. And like I said, it didn't affect hockey. And I'm sure if you win a title going through this, you know, modified bubble, you probably will feel pretty good about yourself anyway. Let me ask you this before we stop on the base.
Yeah, did the Rays win this series? Yeah, let me ask you. Did the Rays win this series?
I guess if I have to think about it, no. I look at the year, the 40 and 20, the pitching and all that. I mean, I just think it's going to be awfully hard to navigate that lineup every single night. Here's the thing. If it goes seven, Tom, or five, I'm sorry, not seven. If it goes seven, we're in trouble. If it goes five, then you got to make a decision. You handing the ball to Blake Snell with one less day rest?
I do. I hand it to him, and I have somebody I have somebody warming up almost immediately. I mean, obviously it's Johnny Holstaff in a game five, but I would.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind starting Blake Snell, and I mean he may go.
You can't go very long.
He may go a third of an inning, or he may go three innings.
Yeah.
Or whatever,
yeah.
You know. But I think I would go back to him. What's my I don't know what other options. They'll probably.
Well, I don't. I mean, you know,
in a game four, probably be an opener.
Guys like that. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. Or an opener, you know, you could spackle it together somehow, I guess. But
I think they win it, Rick.
I think
they're going to win the series. I think they're going to win it because I think they rough up Tanaka in game three. And then game four, the Yankees are going to have a decision to make about what to do in game four. Hap is no longer an option, you wouldn't think. So they're going to have to somehow piecemeal it together. And then here's the thing, Rick. I think the Rays have to win it in four in order to win it because I don't know if I want to try to beat Garrett Cole in a game five.
Garrett Cole.
But I also don't think they're afraid of Garrett Cole. I don't think they're afraid of him. And he'd be pitching on he'd be pitching on 3 days rest if he were to pitch on Friday. So I think the Rays, I like it. I like their chances at this point. You almost feel like, game one, that was a winnable game. And the fact that they let it, if they could have won that game, beat Garrett Cole, that would have been great, but ultimately that was probably a game you probably chalked up to a loss. You know, if I told you the first four games they're going to lose one of them for sure, which one would it be?
You'd pick game one.
Yeah, and I think they're not afraid of the Yankees. That's the thing. That's the thing I've noticed. Like, they're not intimidated.
I think you're right. That's what I get from this whole season in beating them the way they did. They do not have one bit of knuckle under to those guys. They just don't. And it's remarkable to see because they got all the big names and the money and the, you know, and all of that. But the Rays feel like they're better. They feel like they're a better team.
Well, and not
I think
only
they
that,
really believe they are.
I believe that too. And I think that the Yankees, I think that, not that any major league
they're
baseball
in the
team
had a little, they're in the Yankees' head a little bit.
I think that's it. That's exactly where I was headed. I think they're in the Yankees' head a little bit because after game one, which was, you know, that game was so close, and then all of a sudden the Yankees just blew it open in the ninth, and it kind of felt for a minute like, ugh, this was what everybody was afraid of, that once the playoffs got here and the Yankees had their act together. But if they were going to fold, game two would have been the one they would have folded. And even after Stanton hit the home run, it, like I said, it scared me when he hit it. It didn't scare the Rays. And that was the last run that the Yankees scored until the ninth inning.
They put on the board, yeah.
Yeah, so I like their chances. I like their attitude. I like the way they're playing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, so if you could pick a team for them to come out of this, and you can base this on anything, but A's or Astros?
I think A's Rays would be a fun series, but man, if you're a Rays fan, don't you want the Astros?
Don't you want the Astros?
Yeah. Now, if you're a baseball fan, like, you want the Astros out. It was like,
by the way, did you hear the Astros crowing after they swept Minnesota in Minnesota 2-0?
Yeah. Which didn't surprise
like what do you
me.
Think about us now? Oh yeah, what about us now? First of all, the Twins are like 0-20. They lost like 20 in a row.
You know what? I left Minnesota.
I think you're the last guy to cover a playoff game.
I was gonna say
won.
I left there in 2003. I think
wasn't
their
that
last,
like Kent Herbeck or something like
almost. It was like it was 2004.
Jack Morris pitched 10 innings or something. Was that it?
That was it. Feels that seriously. I think their last playoff win I think I saw was like 2004 or somewhere like that. Somewhere in there.
That's been it though. That's 20 games. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's yeah. So you didn't accomplish much yet. But now what? They're a game away, right? From getting to the ALCS. But and that's another team I don't think the Rays are afraid of. I don't think they're afraid of the Astros.
Without the garbage cans.
No, they're not anymore. And Tyler Glasnow's not going to be tipping his pitches this time around. Now, of course, they got to get through the Yankees first, obviously. But if I had to pick one or the other. I think the A's Rays would be a fun series, but boy, I would now. Have you liked this format? Have you liked the way would you want to see this?
No, I was
this many teams best of three to start the.
Oh, you know what? You know they got to. Here's what I would adjust. And I don't know how you do this, but my theory was, and it happened to the Cubs, and I thought it could have happened to the Rays. I don't think if you win a division, right? You draw the lower seed, but that 2 out of 3,
scary.
Listen, we could take the Pittsburgh Pirates, right? And if we go into, you know, into the Trop or into name the National League ballpark and who they're playing, doesn't matter. And you somehow win game one, you're in a dogfight. I mean, it's baseball. 2 out of 3.
Right.
2 out of 3 doesn't settle anything.
No, particularly, and like every team has a decent one ace. Everybody has, like you could be a lousy team and have one guy that can dominate.
Still get a well-pitched game in game one, and now you're fighting for two elimination games.
Right.
I think you should get more of a reward if you're that team that somehow, you know, makes it through other than a 2 out of 3 series. I mean, I recognize you get to host it. And in another year, that might matter, right? Because you'd have fans.
Right.
So maybe that is a huge advantage. I don't know, playing at home. I don't know that playing at home in baseball, though, is all, like, it's not hockey. Like, I don't know how much an advantage it really is. I guess it is an advantage, but.
No, I see what you're saying, though. I mean, ultimately, like you say, momentum's your starting pitching. But I did like the idea of not a wild card, like one wild card game. But you're right. Like, everybody had to play this best of three.
Yeah. Somehow they need to reward the other team and keep them out of harm's way, because you run the risk of not getting the best teams through. And isn't that what we all want to see? We all want to see the best teams, you know, playing for the championships.
Right.
You might get more of an upset. Let's talk about your Tampa Bay Lightning, Tommy. They did it, man. Yeah, and I'll give you Nostradamus here. I remember, what was it, a year ago, and I'm not exaggerating, it was a year ago.
It might have been more than a year
ago. We had a conversation about the Lightning, and you said, yep, doesn't matter. Got to win the cup. Mm-hmm. You lost 4 to Columbus. None of this matters. They will never get past this, Rick, unless they win the cup. That's all this is about. And frankly, there's going to be a hangover. It's going to be a hangover because they're not going to be able to get past it for a while. It'll be Christmas, I think you said. And there was a hangover, and I think Christmas came and went, and then COVID happened. But regardless, they climbed that mountain, Tom, and I mean, it is a cool thing. COVID, no COVID, fans, no fans. That was an intense series. I had little girls that were exhausted, not just because it was late, but because they had poured their hearts into that team. It was everything you would want in a Stanley Cup run, and they did it. And it's the most Tampa thing ever. But what did you make of the Lightning and of some of the dramatics we saw? And what I think is all-time iconic moment, certainly for Tampa sports. It's up there with Ronnie Barber's interception and Marty St. Louis' goal in Game 6, Longo's home run. Steven Stamkos playing, what was it, Game 4, and scoring a big goal is something I will never forget as long as I live.
You know, Rick, and if they had won the cup, Stamkos still would have been there if he hadn't played. And they won the cup. He lifted the Stanley Cup, and his name would have been on the Stanley Cup. But you know deep down, and as much as he had with them being a part of this whole franchise for the past 10 years or however long he's been there now, and he's been a key part of this run since 2015. And
the captain.
The captain and all that. You know deep down he wouldn't have felt like he really contributed if he hadn't played at all. And not only did he play for 3 minutes or 3.5 minutes or whatever it was, but he scored a huge goal. And
yeah, it was.
And now he can retire, Rick, and he's fulfilled what he was brought here to do, and he was a part of it. And I think the two faces, if you really, the two things that really stood out for me was watching the reaction of Steven Stamkos picking up the Stanley Cup and John Cooper's reaction. You could tell John Cooper felt like the weight of the world was lifted off him because he heard it. Look, he's a really confident guy, okay? Borderline cocky.
You think?
Yeah, he's a cocky, arrogant. And I like John Cooper. I get along with him personally. I get along with him professionally when I covered him. Like, I think he's a good guy. But he's very cocky. And he knew deep down that what the word was on him, that until he won a cup, people were going to go, you haven't won a cup. And you could tell the relief on his face. And also, too, and I've said this for the last several years, Rick, that Victor Hedman is the best defenseman in hockey. And his performance in these playoffs was unbelievable. It was, it was fun to watch because every other year I didn't cover the Columbus series because I was already over at Pointer by then. But I covered the 2015 run where they went to the finals and lost. Covered the next year when they went to the Eastern Conference Final, lost in Game 7 to Pittsburgh, and then I covered the year after, or 2 years later, when they went to Game 7 against the Washington Capitals and lost that series. And it was interesting this year to watch it because my son is a huge Lightning fan, and I being in the media for so long, covering for so long, I for the community, I was glad that the Lightning won, but I wasn't emotionally invested like most Tampa Bay people were. But it was fun to watch. And there was a part of me that was happy for these guys too, because I knew how much they had, what a good team
put
they
a
were,
lot into it,
and they put a lot into it. Everybody does, obviously. I mean, Dallas deserved to win too, but this was a team that, until they won a cup, Rick, they hadn't won a cup. You know, if you know what I mean. I mean, they were a great team, a great franchise, a great organization, well run, good players, good coaching, good ownership. They just didn't have that championship, and now that they've won, now we'll see what happens now. I thought the 2014 when they won it was poised to win like three or four, or at least two more or one more for sure. We'll see if this team can repeat. It's really hard to do, but there's no asterisk on this as far as I'm concerned. This is a legitimate championship. Like you mentioned, these games were intense. These games were hard played, I get the travel that did make a difference, I'm sure, I mean, living in a bubble, I can't imagine what that was like, being away from your family and friends for that long.
Oh, it had to be. Yeah, that's an awful, I used the word sacrifice one night, and then somebody, wrote me about the military. It's not what I'm talking about. With respect to John Cooper, you know what I thought of instantly? I think I said this to my wife at the time. I go, that's like becoming a Supreme Court justice, because he just now got a job for life. And I don't mean in Tampa Bay.
No.
I mean that if you win a Stanley Cup as a head coach in the NHL and you've got some years left, John Tortorella is still milking the Stanley Cup from 2004.
You will never be without a job. You're exactly right.
It's a lifetime appointment to a head coaching job.
Two more teams at least. He's got two more teams in him for sure.
Oh, three. Come on.
Unless he punches a player or something. Although Tortorella came close to doing that too, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
No, but Tortorella since then has coached what? He's coached the Rangers.
At least three or four.
Rangers, right? Vancouver, Columbus. Is there another one in there, Steve?
I think those are three.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, if Columbus let him go tomorrow, somebody's hiring him.
He's got one more probably in him.
I think he's got one more.
Mike Keenan won a Stanley Cup in with the Rangers and coached a bunch more teams after that. Yeah. Ken Hitchcock. Has won a Stanley Cup. He's coached a bunch. You're right. You win a Stanley Cup. It's like any sport, though. You win a World Series. You win a Super Bowl.
But there's not that many, right? Like, how many guys are coaching in the NHL right now that have a Stanley Cup? Yeah. Half a dozen?
Well, I'll give you another example. Peter Laviolette just got hired again as the coach of the Washington Capitals. He's taken several teams to the Stanley Cup Finals, but he won a cup, and he keeps getting jobs. Yeah, for sure. No, you're absolutely right about John Cooper. Now, I'm curious if they had flamed out early on, would they have made a change there? Lightning have thought about? That's the other thing. Like, this was a big moment for the organization that if they don't win the cup this year, okay, now it's like, all right, now look at your history. You lost the Stanley Cup Finals. Now you've gone backwards. You lost two Eastern Conference Finals after having 3-2 leads in both of those series. Then you get swept by Columbus. And then if you had flamed out in these playoffs, at that point you're going to be like, something's got to change. We either got to blow this thing up, change coaches, do something. But it's funny how it works. Yeah, they win the cup, and now you're like, now how do we keep the band together? Which will be really hard to do at this point. But
yeah, they're going to lose some pieces. Tyler Johnson, probably, maybe Alex Killorn, although Doc Talk is awfully popular, so I don't know about that. It was great to see. I mean, it was great to see. Now, let me ask you this, because these guys were in a bubble, as you mentioned, for 60-something days, whatever it was. And I mean, they missed birthdays. They missed anniversaries, I'm sure. They missed, watching some of their young kids grow, sporting events, all of that. So there is that, right? But when they came back, Tom, did it feel like a super spreader event to you? I mean, in other words, you had the boat parade and you had people shoulder to shoulder, across the bridges, and then they did this thing at the stadium. And I don't know. The NHL to me has become, and tell me when this started, okay? Like a lot of sports, right? They win a championship, you get the champagne bath, you get all of that in the post game, okay? Is it supposed to be a month bender now? Is that the routine we're talking about? Are you supposed to see just how hammered you can all get at one time over the course of, I don't know, at least at least a week. I mean,
well, yeah, Alex Ovechkin. I was going to say he was drunk for about 3 months.
He raised the bar, or in this case, lowered the bar, or kept the bar open, or whatever he did. I don't know.
Built the bar, burned it down, built it again. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, I was a little disappointed in the celebration. I mean, there's a part of me that understands because they didn't get a chance to really celebrate this cup with their fans through along the way. You know, Rick, you've covered some of these things. You've been a part of it. You've seen it. You've covered Super Bowls. You've been in teams that have gone to championships. There is that moment where it's really, there's this bond between the fans, and every other night they're playing and they go on the road and they come home. And I used to, when I covered those teams, the 2015 team that went to the finals and the other teams that went to the conference finals, I can remember they used to have a lot of press conferences at the airport, at the little airport where they flew in at, you know, the private part next to Tampa Airport.
Hangar One.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there would be fans waiting for them when they came back from games or on their, on their, when they were heading out of town, and to see the, that bond. And then of course, covering the games, 20,000 people and people outside in the plaza there. So I get that they missed all that and they wanted to somehow make up for it.
They wanted to share it. They wanted to share it with the fans too. Yeah.
Right. And
I'm not knocking the fact that they wanted to do these things.
No,
I mean that's the tradition. I mean, that's what you should do. It just came across to me as like, there was a reason you were in a bubble.
And yeah. Right.
And I don't know. And the thing about the trophy, right? The thing about the Stanley Cup, the greatest trophy to win, right? In all of sport, Lord Stanley's Cup, right? But it's the one trophy where you're supposed to kiss, hand off, and oh yes, drink something out of it.
Right.
And I mean, like, from a communal standpoint.
Yeah.
That was a little unnerving.
Yeah, I mean, it bothered me less that they were, when they were in the bubble, but then when they got out, and you saw a video of like, of players pouring champagne in fans' mouths.
To fans down the street. What are we doing?
So that was sad. But I'll tell you what, too, Rick, though, this it's kind of a weird thing, too, now we're talking about asking Tyler Johnson to waive his no trade. And isn't it weird that you go through this, like, incredible run of 5 years and then you finally get over the top and you win a championship, and then like a few days later, like, hey man, we're thinking about trading you, like, to another team. That's got to be a weird thing. And it's obviously the fans want to see every player return, but
right,
you can't keep everybody, and eventually at some point you might end up losing some guys like an Anthony Cirelli or Mikhail Sergachev or people like that too.
Those guys are bound forever. I mean, they're bound forever as champions. So
yeah. And it's, you know, just to watch, too, that everything, you know, I thought about Steve Yzerman, how he helped sort of orchestrate this team. But
give Breezeball credit.
He added people to this team.
I mean, he was all in. He gave up draft pick after first-round draft pick, right? But he recognized that what we needed, speaking from his standpoint, what he needed was – some grinders, some size. He's going to have to rent some guys that weren't going to be, you know, were going to be free agents after this year. And he did what was required, and he got the cup. And it was only going to work if he got the cup. I mean, it would have been probably set the organization back a few years. But you know what? I'm one of those people. Look, I cover a team that has a 43-year-old quarterback. You know, they're not buying green bananas over there at $1 anymore either, I can tell you. And so I'm of the mindset that I don't care who you are in sport. Like, you need to win. If you got a chance to win, go all in and try to win.
They're not the Buffalo Bills anymore, Rick. They're not the
Atlanta. Right.
I mean, they won a championship. I know. Yeah, the Braves won a championship in the 90s. But this makes up for everything. This makes up for the sweep to Columbus. This makes up for losing in the conference finals and then blowing 3-2 leads and losing in the Stanley Cup final. Mm-hmm. This makes it. Now it's just the icing on everything. And now you can look back and say, wow, what a great run. Even if it sort of ends in the next couple of years, you can look back at this entire time and say, what a great run that was from 15 to 20, and they won a cup during that time. So,
yeah, and for that team to win the first cup, I mean, together in the core, it was great. Hey, that was so much fun. Let's do it again. We'll have Tom Jones back, and we're going to get you ready for Bucks at Chicago. Bucks Bears coming up on Thursday night football, and it'll be game three of the American League Divisional Series between the Rays and the Yankees. My thanks to Tom Jones. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.